WTVA. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 57 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tide or Insider TV, Crimson Tide Kickoff, play-by-play for Alabama sports, and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for the Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports, Tide 100.9, and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, good morning, everybody. Let's do this. Welcome into the Gary Harris Show for Tuesday, October 28, 2025. I'm your host, Gary Harris. Chase Brumfield, alongside Manny the Controls, taking your phone calls on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. We got a great show on tap for you today, a busy show. Man, there's just so much going on right now. We talked yesterday about these coach firings, and it's, you know, I was talking with Barry during the transition from Wimp and Barry to my show, and you know, money talks, and, you know, people want to write a check to get rid of these coaches, but these buyouts are ridiculous to begin with. They're ridiculous. I mean, it's just, it, you know, how did this get started, that you sign these coaches and you give them this incredible amount of money if they're a failure, or if they don't live up to your expectations that they're hired to do the job? I mean, it's gotten ridiculous, you know, all of it. I mean, the games are fun. I get it. We enjoy them. But all of the underbelly of this now, this is supposed to be college sports, and it is just, it's no different than the pros. Players making millions, players staying in college 6, 7, 8 years, 25, 26, 27, 28-year-old guys in college, guys coming back to college from the NBA G League. As I've said before, it's only a matter of time before you get somebody that's going to come back from the NFL or the NBA or the Major League Baseball when they flame out, and they're going to say, hey, I've got college eligibility remaining, and I want to go back to college. Who's going to stop them? You know, I don't see anybody stopping them. And so, and, you know, we continue to hear a lot of lip service about we're going to work on this, and we're going to work on this, and we're going to work on this, and it just keeps on going on. I don't think anything's going to get done. It's the system that it is. Going to a bowl game now for most of these big-time programs doesn't mean anything. Nobody's excited about it. Maybe if you're a lower-tier program, going to a bowl game still has some pizzazz, but for these Power Four programs that have national championship and playoff aspirations, going to a bowl game means nothing. I remember last year when Alabama went down to play Michigan in that bowl game, there was about as much excitement for that game as there was for going to your, you know, to your whatever, something you don't look forward to doing. And there just was no buzz around it, no excitement. Fans weren't excited because you weren't in a playoff, you know, you weren't playing for anything. And but that's the system that's been created. It's a system we live with. And, you know, this Brian Kelly thing, though, is just unbelievable to me. I mean, the guy was not a terrible coach. Not like he was doing a terrible job. It's not like they were bad. But you know what? They had somebody step up and say, hey, we'll write him a check for $53, $54 million, whatever he's owed. And then, you know, what about Scott Woodward, the AD? And I know he's hired sports coaches at the non-revenue sports that have done really, really well. But this is the guy that signed Jimbo Fisher at A&M. And they had to let him go for the biggest buyout in college football history. Then he hires Brian Kelly. They have to let him go for the second highest buyout in college football history. Of course, you know, there's a lot of national media people out there yapping about, you know, LSU needs to sign Nick Saban to $25 million a year, make him an offer that he can't refuse. Heck knows. Who knows? In this environment, maybe they will. I mean, I don't count out anything anymore. I mean, could a college football coach make $25 million a year? I still would have to see it to believe it, but nothing would shock me. I mean, it would not shock me at all. I'll run down the lineup for you here in just a second and talk about some stuff that's going on outside of this crazy college sports environment that we're in. But first, I need to tell you, this hour of the Gary Harris Show being brought to you, as always, by Alabama Credit Union. Member-owned and not-for-profit, it's just a better way of banking. I love Alabama Credit Union. You will, too. It's, man, the advantages are so many. Find out more at alabamacu.com. That's alabamacu.com. Or get by and see them. They're located all over the state of Alabama with 38 locations and one in Northwest Florida, including the hub, the main office right here in Tuscaloosa. Alabama Credit Union is a top-rated local credit union. Alabama Credit Union, loans for real life. Some rules and restrictions do apply. See if you're eligible for membership, then join today and feel good about your money. And put a little extra change in your pocket. All right, World Series Game 3 last night. Whew. I didn't see it. I mean, I went to bed long before, you know, and I don't get home until later, but I watched I just had a feeling this one was going to go a while. So I don't know. I guess it was in maybe the 13th inning when I cut it off. I said, I can't handle anymore. And then get up this morning and see the Dodgers finally won it in 18 innings, 6-5 over the Blue Jays. And this is a crusher for the Blue Jays because they played well enough to win last night. They had chances to win. Had a guy thrown out at the plate. And if they win that game, they've got the home field advantage right back. I mean, you know, they got a 2-1 lead. They got an excellent chance to win the World Series. Now you wonder if it'll even make it back to Toronto. That game's just got to crush you. You know, you're the road team, play 18 innings, and think about pitching for both of these teams. Now, Otani is going to be good to go in game four. I mean, that's the amazing thing about having a position player that's also a pitcher. So the Dodgers are going to be, you know, in great shape for game four. And for Blue Jays, I don't really know what their pitching is going to look like, but I know that that's just a devastating loss, man. That's about all you can say. I mean, it's for either team, but particularly the Blue Jays on the road to have a chance to take a 2-1 lead. And, you know, now the thing about it is, Chase, you just played 18 innings, and I understand these are professional athletes, but the emotional and wear and tear, and you got to come back out, and you got to play tonight, and you got to play tomorrow night. And then you go back, you know, then you get a rest day, and you go back to Toronto. But these next two games, like I said, I think there are a lot of people that feel like it may not get back to Toronto for game six, that the Dodgers could end this thing in L.A. Shane Bieber on the bump for the Blue Jays against Shohei Ohtani. And, you know, Bieber is a guy that has good stuff. He's from Southern California. So, you know, it's going to mean a lot to him to pitch against the Dodgers. But can he hold up against Shohei and that L.A. lineup? You know, we're gonna find out. So it'll be interesting tonight. But what a game last night. Again, I didn't see the end of it. But if you stayed up and saw the whole, watched the entire game, more power to you. But, you know, the Dodgers get that crucial game 3 win after dropping game 1. They came back and won game 2 in Toronto. Because usually in the World Series, you say, well, the game 1 winner, I think statistically, you know, it's a high, high probability that the game 1 winner is going to win the World Series. But now, because the Dodgers have a 2-1 lead, they've got the next two in L.A., they're strong, strong favorites. Also, getting back to college football with Alabama on bye, it is a chance to kind of catch your breath a little bit. And I think that's good, because in the 12-game regular season that we play now, and with an SEC championship game possibly, and then the college football playoff, two byes in a season is needed. It just really is. And this one's coming at a perfect time for Alabama, for everybody. You know, I thought the first bye came at a perfect time. They'd lost at Florida State. They came home. They handled Monroe and Wisconsin and then had a chance to kind of hit the reset button. And they went on that 5-week stretch where they went 5-0 in the SEC. And now they're set for the 4-game stretch with LSU at home, Oklahoma at home, Eastern Illinois at home, and then the Iron Bowl at Auburn. Finish that thing off, and you're Atlanta playing for an SEC championship game, and you're also in the college football playoff. All right, let's go ahead and take a phone call. Let's jump out on the Gary Harris Show hotline, and Robbie Glenn is going to lead us off. Hey, Robbie.
Hey, good morning, Gary. I was like you last night. I shut it down 13th inning. It was almost 12 o'clock. I was like,
that's enough, yeah.
I got to shut it down.
Yeah, yeah. But, and you woke up this morning, and you checked the score, and you said, oh, my gosh, I'm glad I shut it down because it went another 5 innings.
Yeah, I mean, so they had to finish, what, around 2, 1:30?
Had to be, around 2 probably, I guess, yeah.
And, you know, Stryker gets up at 3:45, 4. He don't care if I was up watching a game or not. He's getting up, so I was like, all right. But, yeah, what a game. I mean, but Ohtani, I mean, that man is just putting on a show. And, you know, you hate – it probably could have ended the game a lot earlier if they didn't intentionally walk him every time he came up. What, he walked 5 times?
Yeah, something like that.
That's crazy.
Of course, you can't blame him. I mean, it.
No, you know, not at all.
It is what it is. I mean, you're trying to win the game if you're Toronto, and that guy's just on a different planet right now.
he's pulling the home run. He's pulling doubles. He's hitting doubles the opposite way. It's like he's just in a zone. And now he gets to turn around and pitch tonight. So if there's one silver lining maybe for Toronto is their pitcher was that back at the hotel resting.
Yeah,
Ohtani
that's right.
was still at the field.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, that's one maybe thing that'll be in their favor. But other than that, I think Ohtani's just – he's going to be on tonight again. So should end, it's going to be a good, fun game.
Well, if Toronto's going to win the World Series, well, obviously statistically they have to win one of the next two or they're done. But I think they need to win tonight, even with Ohtani on the hill. To get it to 2-2 and make it a best of three, knowing you're going back to Toronto, I think that revives you. And, you know, you get past this heartbreaking loss from last night. But if you lose tonight, I think the Dodgers will go ahead and take care of them in five. I do.
Yeah, they probably will. But, you know, both teams probably used a lot of their bullpen.
Sure,
so you better hope your starters give you at least 5-6 tonight because your bullpen got used.
Dodgers had Kershaw out there pitching.
That was awesome.
You know, you went all in that game last night, and that's why it's such a huge win for the Dodgers and such a, you know, just takes the life out of you loss because of how long it took to play, all the pitching you had to use. If you win it, you're okay with it. But as a losing team, like you said, now Bieber's back at the hotel. He'll be good to go tonight. But still, that's man, that's a tough loss for Toronto because they had so many chances to win the game. I mean, they really did.
I mean, and you bring in a Hall of Famer with bases loaded, two outs, and he does the job. I mean, that was just great.
Yeah.
Great baseball. If you're a baseball fan, that was just fun to watch all the way around, the plays, the hits. I mean, the one-handed grabs. I mean, there were so many great plays in there.
That's why
it's gonna be fun to watch.
You know, and I know it's regular season, but that's why this – well, hey, maybe you know what? You exhaust pitching all that, but that's why that putting a runner on second base in the 10th inning is so stupid. That's not the way baseball is designed to be played. It's designed to get your own people, manage to get your own people on base or get three outs. It's not designed where we're going to start the inning off with some guy on second base. That's just not, you know, and I'm glad they don't do it in the postseason.
Nah,
I guess
it's not baseball.
You know, it's not. Whether the game goes 16 innings, 17 innings, 18 innings, part of it. I mean, that's the way the game is played. And, you know, of course, they don't do it in the postseason. But can you imagine if the World Series, you started out in the 10th inning with a guy on second base, how stupid that would seem? Well, it should seem that stupid for regular season baseball, too. And I think they're going back to the old rules next season, right, Robbie?
Yeah, I hope so. I had heard that, and they should, because that's baseball, like you said. When you put a guy out there in second, that's just giving a favoritism. That's what you're taught when you come up there, like, hey, you're the leadoff. Do what you can to get on base.
Yeah.
You know, take till you get a strike, lean in, maybe get hit, but try to go up, so just get on base. But that just take that away. So, but it was fun. And then I know Bama – you know, with being off this week, much needed rest and get ready for a night game with LSU with no telling what they're going to throw at us with the coaching change. So you better be ready for that one because they're going to be ready.
Yeah, better be ready for them all because now they've got a chance. Now you can smell it. You can smell an opportunity to do something special. And the last thing you want to do is have a hiccup in this stretch run. So I think the bye week's coming at a perfect time. I think this team has matured. I think they you know, in close games, they feel like they're going to find a way to win the game. They've been doing it every week, and I think they got a chance to do something special. Hey, good to hear from you, Robbie.
All right, Gary, good to hear from you. Roll Tide.
Thank you. All right, it's 9:20 here on the Gary Harris Show, and 205-342-9904 is the number if you want to join us. Hey, the lineup for today, it's a good one. The Rocket Man coming up at 9:30, Drudy Arman. Then at 10:30, Corey Reamer, former Alabama national champion linebacker, now a sideline reporter for the Crimson Tide Sports Network for Alabama football, former Hoover High Buck. Corey Reamer going to break it down this first eight games of the Crimson Tide season for us and look ahead to this stretch run. That's coming up at 10:30, so we can't wait for that. As I said, your phone calls are welcome. 205-342-9904 is the number. This is the Gary Harris Show on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC, your home for Alabama sports. As As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and Three special.
For you, contact Courtney White at 205-242-5127. North River Timber, CO at gmail.com. North River Timber Company.
Since 2011, Billy Sports Grill, located on Main Avenue in historic downtown Northport, has been serving their legendary signature chicken sandwich, award-winning wings, and handcrafted cocktails. Billy's is also the spot to watch all your favorite sporting events with big screen, high definition televisions, both dining rooms, at the bar, and out.
The Tailgate Show is presented by Pearl River Resort, DCH Regional Medical Center, Two Dimes Tuscaloosa, and Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram. You see him on WVUA 23 covering sports and on Tider Insider TV on Tuesday nights. Don't miss a minute of the Gary Harris Show. Weekdays from 9 to 11 on Tide 100.9.
Action. We'll see the people of the world coming out to dance because there's music.
9:24, welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. You know, game days are always important, and Game Day Men's Health, located at 1013th Street East in Tuscaloosa, can help men of all ages. Game Day Men's Health offers convenient, expert-backed care for all men looking to fulfill and perform at their best. They specialize in testosterone health, erectile dysfunction treatment, weight loss therapy, peptides and vitamin therapy, and your personal... Your personalized treatment starts with their signature three-step plan. Step one is complete intake and simple blood work. Get results in 15 minutes. Step two, meet with a clinic director who specializes in hormone therapy and men's health. And step three, begin your customized treatment plan. Free consultations. If you're suffering from fatigue, stress, poor sleep, low libido, and weight gain, tell you what, you can get that fixed with your tailored men's health plan from Game Day Men's Health. 1013th Street East in Tuscaloosa. Get by and see them today and start on the way to better men's health. That's Game Day Men's Health. All right, 9:25 here on the Gary Harris Show. And we got some time to squeeze in some phone calls here in this segment before we get to Drew DeArmond, 205-342-9904. If you want to give us a call, we would love to hear from you. Sticking with college football and what I was kind of touching on at the top, again, I've got no, I still enjoy the games. I'm a sportscaster. Why wouldn't I? So, I mean, it's not like I'm not enjoying it, but what we're seeing now is a product of the big business aspect of it. And it's, to me, it's past anything that resembles what kind of the concept was for college sports. I mean, I understand that for many, many years, I mean, players have been getting paid under the table, and but still, the NCAA had a pretty good grip on things. I mean, you know, if you cheated too overtly or too out of control, you were going to get penalized. The eligibility requirements were pretty much enforced. And if you transferred, there was a time when you had to sit out a year. And I'm not a fan of that, but for the most part, college football and basketball was designed for players to come in, be developed. If they did leave, you know, it was not that common, and work on getting a degree. Some of them got to play professional sports, but many of them at least set themselves up for a successful career in whatever endeavor that they had. And now with pay for play, you've got some of these college athletes that are going to make more money playing college sports than they're ever going to make the rest of their lives. They know that. They're fighting to stay in college as long as they can. You got pro athletes wanting to come back to college. You've got coaches getting fired. Before we even at the end of October, we've got coaching vacancies at Florida, LSU, Penn State, Virginia Tech, Oklahoma State, UCLA, Arkansas, Stanford, Oregon State, UAB, and Colorado State. To be continued, more are coming. So outside of the fact that we enjoy the games, the rest of this stuff is just, I mean, it's a mess. And again, because the games are so exciting and Saturdays are just, you know, you can start in the morning watching your favorite pregame show at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then you can go all the way up until 12 midnight, 1 a.m. watching football. And it's fun and it's exciting. And, you know, you got multi-screens on your TV or you got your remote and you can, I mean, you can literally sit on your couch all day and it's entertaining as heck. Or if you go to a game, be a part of the tailgame. I'm not questioning that at all. But like I've said before, at one time, it was kind of like the Wizard of Oz. You know, you didn't get to see how the sausage was made. You didn't get to see the man behind the curtain working the levers. Now that's kind of been exposed. I mean, it's just all out there. You know, this is big business. This is big business. This isn't about, you know, and then you get a chance at an education. I get that. If you're an individual that wants to pursue that, you can. But for the most part, this is about bringing in guys to help you win football and basketball games, whatever you have to do, you know, schedule-wise. You know, if they don't want to go to class, you can set them up remotely. We're going to practice football at this time, and we're going to build everything they do academically around their sports schedule. That's kind of the way it is now. You know, it's the tail wagging the dog. Used to, you know, you had to set your practice schedules around the academics. Not now. Academics works around what these coaches want to do as far as their practice schedules and their meetings. Game day, ESPN College Football Game Day on Saturday did something. I don't know if you saw it, Chase, on Diego, a day in the life of Diego Pavia. Marty Smith was with him. Started at like 6:30 that morning, out throwing to his receivers and so forth. Therapy. And never mentioned going to class at all. And this is Vanderbilt. Man, I'm not saying that they didn't, but it never mentioned it. The entire day, nothing was mentioned about going to class. It was all football related, therapy related, eating related. There was nothing in that day in the life of Diego Pavia that ever showed him taking a book into a classroom. Which tells me, based on that he didn't go to class. That I guess he does them online or remotely or whatever. And that's Vanderbilt. It's supposed to be the, you know, according to some, the Harvard of the South. All right, 9:30. We got to get to the break. We'll come back with Drew DeArmond and the Rocky Man next here on the Gary Harris Show.
When the job calls for the best, call on Makita. Built to be the best. Available at the Home Depot.
The best place for your high school football coverage is right here on Tide 100.9 and online on Tide100.9.com.
Gary Harris Show, former Alabama National Championship outside linebacker, current sideline reporter for the Crimson Tide Sports Network, Corey Reamer, will join us at 10:30. Right now, as you just heard, thanks to Elton John, it's time for the Rocket Man, Drew DeArmond, from 977 ESPN Radio in Huntsville, joining us for his weekly visit. Good morning, Drew. How's it going?
I'm doing well, Gary. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Well, mission accomplished for Alabama after dropping that season opener at Florida State. The Tide got home and got the two wins over Monroe and Wisconsin, and then we knew that this five-game stretch was going to tell the tale for this season to a great part of what we are going to see. Now, we've still got four games left for Alabama, but by winning those five straight games in 5 weeks, four of them over ranked teams with Georgia, Vanderbilt, Mizzou, Tennessee, and now taking it down to the wire against South Carolina. They've set themselves up, Drew, for something special. 7-1, 5-0 in the SEC, the bye week, then three home games against LSU, Oklahoma from the SEC, Eastern Illinois, and then the Iron Bowl in Auburn. So I say all that just to set you up with where we're at right now and where you think this team is going to go.
Well, I mean, they've created an opportunity. They're not guaranteed anything. They haven't won anything, but they just completed the toughest stretch in SEC history. And, you know, there's people that can debate that, including Big Ten honks who wouldn't know a football from a basketball. And I got into it with a couple of the Indiana fans who all of a sudden think they're a football power. But, you know, when you play Mo, Larry, and Curly in your pre-conference and you only have four or five good teams in your league, then you start thinking you're that good. Well, do I think Indiana's a really good team? Yes, I do. Do I think they're in the playoffs? Yes, I do. Do I think they're going to win a national championship? Very doubtful. But I think they're good, though, and certainly I think they're better than a year ago. Last year I didn't think they belonged in the playoffs because I didn't think they beat anybody. And then the only two teams with a pulse they played handed them their ass, and that was, of course, Ohio State and Notre Dame. But they're better this year. They proved a lot when they won 30-20 at Oregon because I didn't think they would win that game. And they didn't just win it. They dominated it. So I give them credit. I've looked at the rest of their sad sack schedule, and they're going to go undefeated. There's no doubt about it in my mind until they play Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game in Indy, and then we'll see what happens. But I think both those teams are in the playoffs. I think the SEC right now is the toughest league in the country, Gary. And I think if we're starting to see separation within the conference, and yet the crazy part is it's still not, you know, decided by any stretch because, as we saw in the league, Alabama won four straight games against ranked opponents, and yet probably the toughest game in that five-game stretch was against South Carolina. Not because South Carolina was the best team they played, but because of the way the schedule was set up. And don't get me wrong, Carolina's not a great football team by any stretch, but they've got a first-round talent at quarterback, in Lenora Sellers. And then they have two really good rushers in Brian Thomas Jr. and then, of course, Dylan Stewart. And I just think they match up well against Alabama. And Alabama, to me, from the first drive, they looked tired. Ty was off. He wasn't hitting all year. And then you're banged up because you don't have Lazier Brooks, who's become very important, especially since he didn't play much, if at all, against Florida State. And then you didn't have Isaiah Horton very much. He was injured and then sick. You didn't have Geno Vandermark. And while Geno, you know, has been up and down, he is a veteran who's been through the wars, and so you didn't have him. And so I just thought, you know, everything pointed to Alabama not pulling it out. Because, and then besides Ty being off, it was probably the most drop passes, or I know it was. It was even more drop balls, in my opinion, than against Florida State. They dropped at least five. They dropped, Xavier Brown dropped an interception. But here's where the difference is, Gary. The leadership of this football team is light years ahead of where it was last year from a standpoint of the players. Now, the coaching staff is a little different because Ryan Grubb is here calling plays, and he's certainly an intense guy the players have bought into. But these players are the ones that picked themselves up by the bootstraps and won this game. I mean, after the missed clipping and then the turnover and being down 22-14, it looked as bleak as we've ever seen. Alabama had really only had one good drive all day. But then when it mattered, Ryan Grubb, of course, called the plays, but the players went out and beautifully executed. That was probably as sweet a two-point conversion as I've ever seen. Great play design, great execution. And I thought when it happened that, okay, now Alabama has at least given themselves an opportunity to win it in regulation or overtime because this is going to be true game pressure. When you're up two, there's a little bit of pressure, but you're still ahead. But when it's tied or you're behind, it's a different kind of pressure. Last year we saw what happened. Lenora Sellers turned it over in Tuscaloosa. Well, he did it again. Deontay Lawson, who had had an up-and-down game, did a great job as a captain stripping that football. And then another team captain, which was so apropos, recovered it in Tim Keenan. And then Alabama executed. South Carolina, I think, you know, made a tactical error in saying let Alabama score. Because to me, no matter the length of the field goal, I would have made Connor Tulsey kick it because he's never had to try a game-winning kick before. We know he's been up and down, but I would have put the game pressure on him because Worst case scenario, if he misses, you're going to overtime if you're Carolina. If he makes it, you lose the game. But at least if he misses it, you still got a shot. So I think they made a tactical error in letting Germ score. But that comes to, that goes to game pressure. And I thought when the stakes were the highest, I thought Alabama gritted their teeth, played free, and executed. And then I thought South Carolina was tight and didn't finish. And that's a credit to the players and the coaching staff. And so much a big part of this portal NIL era, Gary, we saw it in Baton Rouge, is if you believe in your coach and everybody is on the same page, then you're going to keep fighting no matter what. And you're going to keep battling. If you don't believe in your coach, if he's got fake accents and, you know, he doesn't come across as authentic, then you quit against Texas A&M and get your butts handed to you on your home field where everybody says that their dreams go to die. The only problem is right now, the only dreams dying is LSU. So, but I just thought Alabama did a great job of showing a lot of grit, a lot of toughness, and a lot of mental fortitude that we saw that was missing a year ago. But that just goes to prove once again that Kalen DeBoer's on the right track. And you got to give Alabama credit for finding a way to navigate as tough a stretch as you're ever going to see. Now, this league is going to get tougher every year probably. So there's going to be stretches that other teams, include and Alabama as well, are going to have to go through like that again. But you got to give Alabama a ton of credit for going 5-0 against a gauntlet like that, where it, when the season began, if you had seen how the schedule sat up, a lot of people thought that that South Carolina game was going to be a tough one, and it certainly was.
Yeah, it was. And that's, again, Drew, with where we're at in college football, results matter, and Alabama found a way to win that game. I would say this to you, Drew, and I want to get your reaction, is in the SEC, which has become kind of a mini NFL, you know, there's not a lot of difference right now between the teams that are 4-1 and 5-0 and the teams that are 1-4 and 0-5. In terms of the talent, in terms of where we're at. But all the difference is the fact that you either win or you lose. And isn't that kind of where we're at? It just comes down to the results. I mean, all these teams in the SEC are capable of beating you. Some of them, even if you play well, others if you have a bad day. But it's all about finding a way to win the games. And that's what Alabama and a few other teams have done. And that's the difference. I mean, if I look at Alabama and Auburn right now and they play, as they will in a few weeks down at Jordan-Hare Stadium, I know that's going to be a tough game. You know that's going to be a tough game. You look at the two rosters, and there's not that much difference. But the difference right now is Alabama's winning those games, and that's what's important.
Well, I mean, Auburn has an elite defense, and they've played well enough to win every game. The difference is in this past game against Arkansas, you know, they did have the horrendous pick six to dig the 21-10 hole. But after that, they finally didn't turn it over. They executed. And then, and I'm very happy for him for what he's gone through as a person. Alex McPherson was the guy you thought he was. He went 6-for-6. And while Auburn didn't score touchdowns, they kicked field goals and they found a way to win. And don't forget, Gary, that this shows how tough the SEC is. Arkansas was driving to beat Ole Miss a few weeks ago and then fumbled the football.
Mm-hmm.
And Ole Miss right now is a college football playoff team, and Lane Kiffin is wanted by every university in America. And if he had lost the Arkansas game, I don't think that's the case, okay? But that's the way this works. Kentucky had Texas beat. How they lost, I still don't know. But they did, and they lost that game, and Kentucky hasn't won an SEC game. So you have to understand that's where we're at right now. And then you top it off by Mississippi State. How excruciating is that?
Incredible. Because
Mississippi State, I mean, think about this, Gary. They are a play or two away from beating Tennessee, a play or two away from beating Texas, a play or two away, really one play, from beating Florida on the road. They would be 7-1 and be in the top 10 in the country. They would be a bigger surprise than Vanderbilt last year. I mean, I'll be honest, they may go 0-8 still, but I thought they were going to be non-competitive like they were last year. They've been, They're two times the football team they were a year ago. And so that just shows the depth in the SEC, Gary. I mean, right now I think there's five teams in the SEC that are starting to separate. Of course, that would be Texas A&M, Alabama, Georgia, Vanderbilt, and Ole Miss. But Texas has somehow found a way to beat Mississippi State and Kentucky. And if they knock off Vanderbilt without Arch Manning likely on Saturday, then, you know, then they're going to be right there still as well. Now, do I think Vanderbilt can win that game? I absolutely do. And that's just the world we live in right now. I think the SEC, and I wondered if this would be the case, and it has been. The SEC has separated itself from the rest of the league. It's not even close in how deep these leagues are. I don't care what Indiana wants to yell and Ohio State, and they're good. Don't get me wrong. And they'll get a chance to prove their mettle in the playoffs, but they're not having to navigate the kind of path an SEC school is.
Well stated. When you look ahead at this four-game stretch that Alabama's got left to finish out the regular season, do you think they go 4-0 and win the Iron Bowl and will go to Atlanta 11-1 and 8-0 in the SEC with a chance to win the SEC championship? Think they'll run the table?
They're going to be favored in every game, so they've got that opportunity. But to me, this is a team that doesn't have a ton of margin for error. They certainly are getting better, Gary. I truly believe that. I know it didn't look like they did against Arkansas, but again, a lot of that was circumstance. If they can get healthy again, recharge their batteries, get to be a full strength on offense, get Lottie back, Horton healthy, and get Vandermark back, then yes, I think they've got a chance. They should beat LSU. I don't think LSU is very good, honestly. I think they're average. Certainly Oklahoma has the front that would scare you. They can absolutely rush the passer, and they're tough up front, no doubt. And Mateer is a competitor, but I don't think Oklahoma is great on offense, and you've got that game in Tuscaloosa. In Eastern Illinois, that should be a win. Get a chance to play a lot of people. And then you go to Auburn, and we know it's crazy over there. Look, I know Alabama's won the last two, but you saw how they had to win them. Both of them were insane finishes, no doubt about it, and crazy. But again, and then even in 19 when they lost, that was an insane game, just back and forth. So you know it's not going to be easy with that Auburn defense. And if Auburn goes on a run, because we don't know. I mean, if Auburn should beat Kentucky Saturday, and then after that, if they go to Nashville and knock Vanderbilt off, all bets are off. It completely changes the feel of it. And I do think as long as he doesn't, give it all back against Kentucky, I think he's going to finish the season now as Auburn head coach. And he'll be fighting for his job in that Iron Bowl. So you'll get Auburn's best shot. That's probably going to be Alabama's toughest test, along with Oklahoma, in my opinion. But I do think Alabama's got a great shot to run the table. And the beautiful thing about where they put themselves, Gary, is they control what they can control. And if they win, they're in Atlanta. It doesn't matter. All these crazy, tiebreakers and all that, don't allow them to come into play. Just go 1-0 each week, and you're in Atlanta. And you're very likely playing Texas A&M. And ironically, A&M has never played in the SEC championship game.
Sure haven't. Never made a trip to Atlanta. Good this year. All right, let's look at big picture stuff. And I went on a little soapbox earlier, Drew, about, this is just professional sports, basically. You say they go to class. Some of them do, I guess. I mean, they did a piece on Diego Pavia Saturday on game day with Marty Smith, spent the entire day with him. Never said anything about class, and I'm sure he's a graduate student, probably, well, I guess by this time, probably working on a doctorate. But regardless, because it's big money, and whether these coaches are hired with these awful buyout contracts, somebody's got to step up. But already, these are Power Four openings: LSU, Florida, Penn State, UCLA, Arkansas, Virginia Tech, Oklahoma State, and Stanford. You add in Group of Fives, Oregon State, UAB, and Colorado State. We're not through October, and we got 11 Division I schools without head football coaches and more to come. What do you make of this? I mean, the games are so much fun. You can get on your couch early in the morning Saturday. You can stay there all day and be entertained. The action, it's exciting. But this this other part of what's going on with college sports is troubling to me. And one area that we're seeing it is these coaches are hired to be fired regardless of the fact that they have incredible buyouts.
Well, that's just the world we live in. You know, I started back thinking of a story Dabo Swinney told when he first got into coaching at Alabama when Gene Stallings hired him as a GA, and then he got on staff and he got a raise to $38,000 and he thought he was rich. And now you think about that, a lot of these coaches make $38,000 every 30 minutes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, and they talked about Brian Kelly. If his buyout is not negotiated down, Gary, they'll very likely pay him in monthly installments. He's making $800,000 a month. So you think about that with that $53 million. But that's just where we are, man. That's in this portal era where it's a microwave society. You have to win. You have to win now. But I will say this. I think it's going to make hiring coaches harder. And the reason I say that is because if you're shooting for the moon, Gary, and you're trying to hire a standing great head coach, 99% of the time they're going to be in the playoff. And if you're and the transfer portal is even during the playoff. So it's going to be very difficult. I'm just saying, like if Lane Kiffin gets Ole Miss to the playoff, Florida and LSU obviously want him badly. Probably even Penn State would want him. But think about it. You're not going to be able to hire him until after the transfer portal is probably done, especially if his team makes a run. So, and then consequently, Ole Miss, you got to put up with those distractions of, constantly hearing your coach speculated about. That's why I think a lot of this hail get in the barn. That's why Cignetti went ahead and took the extension from Indiana. He's happy where he is. He thinks he can win a championship there, and it eliminates distractions. That's why I would not be shocked after Ole Miss, beat Oklahoma. If they keep winning and you're getting down into the Egg Bowl and they've only got one loss, I'm not going to be shocked if Lane Kiffin takes an extension and takes himself out of there. And I'm going to tell you something, too. I've got really good contacts in Nashville. I don't think Clark Lee's going anywhere. I think they're about – because Vanderbilt's different, Gary. You know it. But you know they've got some very powerful alum. If they felt like stroking checks, I was told that when James Franklin left Nashville, he left a 5-year, $50 million contract on his desk.
Wow, back
hey,
then.
That would be 10 years, $100 million right now. I was told today by a guest on my show, Billy Derrick, who does a great job for Vandy 247, that he would not – think about this, Gary. He would not be surprised if Clark Lee agreed soon with Jimmy Sexton negotiating it to a contract like Cignetti.
Jeez. At Vanderbilt. Indiana and Vanderbilt leading the way with coaches' contracts now in football. It's a
crazy.
Brand new world.
Insane. It's
just great. Hey, real quickly, Drew, because we're up against it. It's out there. National pundits are saying, hey, LSU should offer Nick Saban $25 million. I think Nick Saban's set where he's at, but do you think there's any chance with all these job openings? I think there's a good chance that somebody will feel him out and make a run. Do you think he coaches again?
No. I mean, I think he'll get calls, but I think he loves what he's doing, and it gives him a lot of freedom. He's still very close to the game. Now, could LSU call him and say, all right, coach, do you want to coach anymore? No, I do not. Okay, well, what do you think we ought to do? Well, then I think that could happen. He might even help him with Lane Kiffin. I don't know. But do I blame Penn State or LSU or even Florida for calling Coach Saban? I do not. But I think, he's not coaching anymore, and he doesn't have a team, like a football team, but he's got a team over at ESPN. And he's already done more commercials than I ever thought he would do, both radio and TV. And I think he's enjoying what he's doing. And he's certainly not having to be around the house and drive Miss Terry crazy. And I think she enjoys being behind the scenes on game day and still being around a lot of things. And then with all these planes, coach is back for the night game in Tuscaloosa in plenty of time. So he's not missing a thing. So I think he has worked this. He grinded. He had the greatest career we've seen, and now he's just enjoying the fruits of his labor and getting paid a ton of money to talk ball and I think he's perfectly content doing that.
All right, I'm going to give one more, 30 seconds. If Alabama finishes this thing out strong, all these openings with more to come, what's the probability that Ryan Grubb is a head coach somewhere next year?
I think there's a possibility. I wouldn't call it a lock by any stretch. Certainly when you're a hot coordinator, you're going to be mentioned. But I also think that I'm sure Kellen DeBoer will be campaigning to get him a raise at Alabama. And I think if I'm Ryan Grubb, I'm not just going to jump at the first job. I think when you look at a blueprint, you look at what Kirby Smart and how he handled it. And I think another year or two in Tuscaloosa, it certainly helped Stark when he came back and stayed an extra year and he got the job at Texas.
Great stuff as always, Drew. Just mention where they can find you.
Yeah, Drew D, 977 ESPN on X, 977 ESPN's the station. SoundCloud page, 97.7 The Zone. If you miss talking ball with myself and Scott Tyson, or 977ESPN.com. We always enjoy being on the Gary Harris Show. Thank you.
Well, great segment, Drew. We appreciate it. We went over, but that's okay because Chase is going to bail me out. We're going to double up these breaks, so we're going to go ahead and close out the first hour right now of the Gary Harris Show. And so when we come back, we'll be into hour number two. Corey Reamer, sideline reporter for the Crimson Tide Sports Network, coming up at 10:30, former Alabama All-American outside linebacker. More of your phone calls. If you want to dive into this discussion, is this amazing or what? I mean, I still can remember it wasn't that long ago where I know assistant coaches in the SEC. I knew one of them that what he was making at an SEC school, this was in the 80s, And I know another one that in the 90s was doing one of those little sideline multi-level marketing type of deals. Honest to God, to try to make more money. No need for that anymore. All right, that's going to wrap it up for the first hour. Hour number two is on the way. Keep it dialed in to Tide 100.9 FM, 1230 AM WTBC. This hour has been brought to you by Alabama Credit Union.
Remember M for money and Mesrano.
If it has a logo on it, call me. 205-800-8000.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Steve DeSager.
Game three was a classic. The World Series contest at Dodger Stadium went to L.A. over Toronto Monday night in 18 innings, 6-5. Freddie Freeman hit the game-winning homer. The contest lasted over 6.5 hours. Shohei Ohtani with a ground rule double, a solo homer, an RBI double, and then in the seventh, the solo homer to tie it. After those four at-bats with four extra base hits, Toronto walked Ohtani five straight times the rest of the night, usually intentionally. Game four of the series is Tuesday night in L.A., game five Wednesday. Dodgers up 2-1. A Monday night football win at Kansas City for the Chiefs over Washington 28-7. Patrick Mahomes, 3 touchdown passes in the second half. In the NBA, Oklahoma City's 4-0 after winning at Dallas. Denver won at Minnesota. Jamal Murray scored 43 points. Anthony Edwards of Minnesota out 2 weeks with a strained hamstring.
Coming up on The Game with Ryan Fowler.
Coming up on the Tuesday edition of The Game, we'll talk to Mike Dettillier from WWL. We'll talk about what's next for LSU as they prepare for the University of Alabama. We'll do that with Mike Dettillier. We're going to have a film study session with Brooks Austin, the film guy. He's going to break down some Alabama film. We'll talk about where Alabama can improve and what he has been pleased with so far. We'll talk to Chris Plank from SiriusXM, all starting at 2 p.m. on The Game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230, WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports program.
Oh my God!
With 95.3 The Fair and Sports Radio Tide 100.9 and 1230 AM WTBC. Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
The sky mostly cloudy today, just a small chance of a shower, the high 64. Cloudy tonight with rain moving in, the low 55. Tomorrow, a good chance of rain, especially during the morning hours. Otherwise, cloudy and cool, the high 58. I'm James Spann with the Alabama Weather Network on Tide 100.9. It's 57 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The Gary Harris Show. You see him host Tider Insider TV, Crimson Tide Kickoff, play-by-play for Alabama sports, and sports director for WVUA 23. It's time for The Gary Harris Show on your home for Alabama sports. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
All right, here we go. Hour number two of the Gary Harris Show right here on Tide 100.9 FM and 1230 AM WTBC. Gary Harris, Chase Brunfeld with you for another hour. Corey Reamer, former Alabama All-American outside linebacker, now the sideline reporter for Alabama football on the Crimson Tide Sports Network, will join us at 10:30. We can't wait for that. Let's open up the second hour, though, by jumping out on the Gary Harris Show hotline at 205-342-9904. And we're going to welcome in the sheriff, Tom. Hey, Tom.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Doing great, man.
Good show this morning and every morning, actually, I'd say. But enjoyed hearing Drew and your comments about the team, and look forward to that. But I want to ask you something, if you will ask Corey about. And if you don't think it's appropriate, I understand. But I've always heard that, excuse me, Gary, I'm sorry, that Coach Saban made a comment to him one day when they were warming up, and it went like this. If I had been the coach when you come out of high school, you never would have got a scholarship to Alabama. And Corey told him, says, well, I guess I'll just have to show you I'm worth a scholarship. Now, I've heard that. Not from Corey, but would you ask him if that's a true story?
If it comes up, I will. I mean,
going to come up on its own.
Well, I'm not promising that I'll ask him that. But if I get a chance to work it in the conversation,
well,
I will.
I think it's really good because, you know, he went on to have a successful career at Alabama.
Very much so. It's a possibility.
He overcame Coach Saban's smart-ass comment.
Well, you know, I mean, if I get a chance, I'll ask him. But that's probably.
I think Coach Saban admires people that do that.
Yeah, well, what Coach Saban had a template for which he recruited off of, you know. The critical factors, as he would call them, height, weight, you know, speed for certain positions. And you know, there's probably a lot of guys that he inherited on that team that he would not have offered scholarships to.
I bet you anything that Corey's not the only one he said that to. You know, he did the same thing with Dante Culpepper at Miami.
Well,
he told him, he said, I would have never drafted you.
Yeah. Well, he knew what he wanted to do. But, yeah, I'll try to work it in, Tom.
No, I think that's interesting, Gary. It's not bad. It's a good story.
Yeah, I didn't say it was. I just said if I get a chance to work it in, I'm going to work it in.
I'm not mad.
I'm just telling you, I'll try to work it into the conversation. The main thing I want to focus on is the team this year. But
you know, Corey don't come on very often. We don't get a chance to, you know, relay a question like that, do we?
I'll do my best, Tom. Yeah, I usually do. When you ask me to ask some guest of something, I usually get it in. So I'm sure if I get an opportunity,
I really appreciate you, Gary, and I enjoy the show so much.
Thank you, Tom. Appreciate you as well. All right, let's keep it rolling with the Cowboy. And I'll try to work it. It's just, you know, all listeners have to understand is because I give so much access. A lot of people have my cell phone number. There's some social medias. I get a lot of people that are asking me to ask questions for certain guests, and I just can't ask every question that I get asked. That's why I don't like to make any promises, but if I can, I will work it in. Good morning, Cowboy.
How you doing, Gary? What'd you have for dinner last night?
Why do you ask that?
I'm asking you.
Now you're breaking up on me.
I said I'm asking you a question. I'm going somewhere with it. What'd you have for dinner?
Well, I didn't eat dinner last night because I had the podcast and I'd been to the TV station, and I'm intermittent faster, so sometimes I don't eat dinner. So I didn't eat dinner last night. I skipped it.
I got you. Well, I asked Corey Reamer what he ate for dinner last night. I'm curious. Like Tom, you said you asked everybody's question.
Oh, Lord.
I got you.
Well, I know. What else you got?
Diego Padilla It's funny you brought that up. I've always said since he's been quarterbacking at Vanderbilt, he's never put an academic building at Vanderbilt. He's what they look for when they're looking for students across the country.
Well, this is the new college football. Vanderbilt wants to be a major player in it, and they are. And for them to do what they're doing in football, they've had to relax some of their, I feel like anyway, based on what I've been told, they've had to relax some of their academic standards. They've had to, take players out of the portal who maybe academically aren't what they would have had come in the past. And some of these are short-term contracts, if you will. Guys that have a year or 2 years of eligibility, or in Pavia's case, it looks like he's going to wind up maybe playing 3 or 4 years at Vanderbilt. Who knows how long he's going to play there. But you're right. It's a different world. And for schools that are traditionally what we would call cellar dwellers in these leagues, you look in the top 10 now, and it blows you away to see the schools that have elevated Georgia Tech, Vanderbilt, Indiana. I mean, it's incredible.
You know, they used to say, that's okay, you're going to work for us one day. Now they're putting that theory on the field. But what I was going to say, you know, all these people buying off on Clark Lee's greatness, the key to Vanderbilt is Jerry Keel and the offensive coordinator, Beck. Jerry Keel brought Diego Pavia there from New Mexico State. Jerry Keel found Diego Pavia in the junior college ranks. And do some research on Jerry Keel. He's been a championship-level coach. He just had to get out at Minnesota because he was having epilepsy attacks.
Yeah, I don't have to do research on him. I know all about Jerry Keel. And you're right, he's an excellent football coach, and you're absolutely right. That was what Clark Lee decided to do to turn the – listen, at Vanderbilt, Clark Lee's a good coach. He's smart. He's articulate. I think that he cares about Vanderbilt very much. But he was trying to build that program in a traditional manner. It wasn't going to happen. It was not going to happen.
No.
Then the portal comes into play, NIL, and you're right. He decided to, having seen Diego Pavia on tape, and he decided to bring that whole unit in with Beck and with Keel and with Pavia and change the way Vanderbilt does business. And it works out, because had they stayed in their traditional trying to recruit high school players and develop over time, he might be one of those guys looking for a job now. But it's, smart as he is, he totally changed the way that he had planned to build his program at Vanderbilt. And he has gone to the short-term leasing type of agreements with players, and it's working.
Can I ask you this question?
Sure.
Do you know, people think these two coaches right now are two of the top coaches in the SEC. And you know what both of them have in common? They were defensive coordinators for the fired LSU coach, Brian Kelly. The Mike Elko was the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
That took over when they had to get rid of him. Mike Elko came from Wake Forest. Clark Lee came with him from Wake Forest to Notre Dame, and he coached the Notre Dame defense after Elko left to go to Texas A&M with Jimbo. So, now, is Brian Kelly a horrible football coach? I don't know. I've always thought he's been a good football coach. He's hired some good assistants. You know, like, these two guys are taught up well. I guess the situation at LSU just couldn't mesh, you know? What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's a good coach. I mean, I look at his resume at Notre Dame. I mean, he played for a national championship. You know, I know he was in at least one more playoff. But the expectation when he was hired at LSU was to, you know, win a national championship, to continue what they had seen under Saban and Les Miles and Orgeron, all who won national titles. And because the environment of the game has changed so much, the leash was so much shorter. I mean, I'm not saying that I disagree with you. I think he's a good football coach. I think he rubs a lot of people the wrong way. I think he's difficult, but a lot of coaches are. And I think that had he You know, had they kept him, maybe next year would have been the year they broke through. But they thought it was going to be this year. And that's what he had told the boosters. That's what he had told the administration. That's what he had told everybody, that this was going to be their breakthrough year. They were going to have a chance to win a national championship. And when they saw that wasn't going to happen, they decided to get him out of there. Because it's like, you know, this is, you know, we've put up with a lot of stuff from you. We've given you everything that you've asked. You know, the firing of Tommy Moffitt turned out to bite them, because A&M, you know, what they were able to do to LSU the last couple of years, and Moffitt, you know, making a point to make sure that he rubbed it in a little bit. And so as soon as they were out of playoff contention, LSU said, that's not what we brought you in here for. We didn't bring you in here to be an 8 or 9 win coach. We brought you in here to get us in the playoff, get us to Atlanta, give us a chance to win a national championship. And now that it did not happen in the year that you told us it was going to happen, you're done. But that doesn't mean he's not a good football coach. And, you know, and he had, you know, his first year down there, you know, beating Saban was huge. And, you know, he rolled the dice on that 2-point conversion. Most coaches would have went ahead and just kicked the extra point and extended the game. But, you know, he went for the win. And you know, they thought they were on the fast track. I mean, they thought that, you know, he brought a lot of positives. But his inability to keep assistant coaches, and then this year, like we said, with Nussmeier coming back and the preseason hype, and at the time we didn't know, you know, we thought Clemson was better than they turned out to be. That opening game win at Clemson looked like a huge win at the time, a huge win. And it looked like it was going to set the table for LSU to have a big year, and it didn't happen. So, but I think he's a good football coach. And you know what he'll probably do now is, you know, he's got all that money coming his way, the, you know, $800,000 a month or whatever. You know, who knows what he's going to do, but he'll probably coach again. I think he's one of those guys that still has the bug. James Franklin's going to coach again. You know, a lot of these guys, I think Jimbo Fisher's going to coach again. A lot of these guys that have benefited, and I say benefited from this wacky salary structure and buyout structure that we have in college football, that have generational wealth, are going to be able to kind of pick and choose. You know, they can take a job now based on just what they want to do and where they think they fit well. They don't have to take any finance. They're going to all get paid. That's not, you know, they're going to get paid on top of, but they don't have to take a job based on trying to feed their family or set themselves up for financial success. They've got that. So it's a good position to be in for these guys. Who, you know, who's to say if, and I don't think, you know, this, I'm just throwing this out there because I think Alex Morton may wind up getting the job, but who's to say, you know, UAB almost hired Jimbo Fisher once. What's to say, Jim? They say, Jimbo, come coach UAB. You love Birmingham. You got a great track record here. And he says, yeah, man, I can dig that. I'm not saying that will happen by any means, but they have that kind of flexibility now to coach somewhere that they, if they just want to decide, you know, I don't want to be in the pressure cooker that is the SEC, you know? So all these guys, man, have hit the lottery. James Franklin, Brian Kelly, Jimbo Fisher, Billy Napier. Man, they're lottery winners. They're not losers. I mean, it's easy to say they're losers, and I know their ego's bruised by getting fired, but they hit the lottery, dude. I mean, it's unbelievable. Well,
what you're talking about, SEC hot seat. Do you think if Brent Venables finishes 8-4, Oklahoma's going to accept that with a new AD?
I don't know. I think he's one that if this thing were to spiral and they wind up losing a couple more games, they could be out. Because we're in this cycle now of chasing championships, and if you don't get it. But the problem, too, is every time you fire a coach, you got to hire another coach. And the issue that I see is that there's going to be more of these top-tier jobs than there are coaches to fill them. Like I said, you know, if you hire a resume coach, and what I mean by that is if you hire somebody who has a resume that says, hey, I can win a championship, that's one thing to pay them that kind of money. But when you're paying, you know, I think called him Sunbelt Billy, Sunbelt Billy, and I like Billy Napier. I thought he did a great job at Louisiana. But he got paid, all these guys get paid like they are top-tier SEC coaches, because the schools don't want the perception out there that they're not hiring their guy. You know, we're hiring a guy that we believe in, so we're going to pay him like he's a top-tier guy. But a lot of these guys aren't top-tier guys. They don't have the resume. They haven't won a championship. They haven't, you know, been in a college football playoff. They haven't done any of that. But you pay them like they are, and then you have to fire them and pay them off in their buyout, and then you're doing it again. It's like Lane Kiffin. As much as I think Lane Kiffin is a brilliant offensive football coach, as a head coach, his resume, while he's won a lot of games, is still, he's not a championship coach other than as an assistant. He's not a championship coach at Tennessee or at Southern Cal or at Ole Miss. But he's, you know, Got
Gary. People like Lane Kiffin. They'll accept 10-2 with him because they like him better than they'd accept 10-2 or 9-3.
Well, they'll accept 10-2 at Ole Miss because Ole Miss is not at the level that a lot of these other schools are. And last year, even though they didn't make the playoff, you're right, they're still thrilled with him. And they're going to pony up to try to keep him because he's going to have an opportunity to go somewhere else. And getting back to Venables, though, if they lose at Tennessee this week and then lose at Alabama and then lose at home to Missouri, I think they'll beat LSU. But, yeah, you're right. Oklahoma could be looking for a coach. I mean, if this turns out to be a 4 or 5 loss team, like you said, they might be in the coaching sweepstakes. And then there's another major program. And where are you going to fill these jobs? You know, where are you going to fill these jobs? Like we were talking about earlier, just kind of kidding around with it. But, you know, there may be a school, whether it's LSU or somebody else, that just says, hey, Jimmy Sexton, here's a blank check. How much would it take to get Nick Saban to coach our football program, even though he's about to be 74 years old? Who cares? You know, he's the greatest of all time. How much would it take? You're gonna get schools. Listen, if one of these guys is willing to write a check to Brian Kelly for $53 million to go away, who's to say he wouldn't write a check to Nick Saban for $100 million to come in for 4 years? I mean, everything's on the table now, Cowboy. Everything's on the table.
Yep.
There's no integrity at all with these athletic departments in regards to spending or anything else. It's open market. It's a free for all. And if you think you can deliver, you got a coach that can deliver you a national championship, it's worth it to them.
Yeah. One last thing. This Cignetti guy, he bothers me. He's psycho on the sideline. Something about him bothers me. I'm not buying him. And then the college football environment and also probably NFL, it's like going to a nightclub now. You got to have the shiniest, newest things. You got flashing lights. You got music. You got music for certain ages. You got music for another age, like Dixieland Delight. It is the entertainment nightclub business. We got to have the shiniest new thing out there, and we get it going.
No, you said it. It's entertainment. Attention spans are short. Yeah. You're trying to draw fans that aren't traditional football fans. You're trying to make it an experience because of the amount of money that's being involved and spent. So, yeah, they're making it about more. You're going to be in those stadiums because these games never get out done by 3 hours. You know, you're in there before the game. You're in that stadium probably for 4.5 hours. So it's like, you know, we got to be able to entertain people the entire time, keep their attention on what we're doing. So, it's an entertainment experience. Hey, got to run, Cowboy.
All right, be good, buddy. Thanks.
Appreciate it. 10:21 here on the Gary Harris Show and the YMCA of Tuscaloosa, man. It's where I go to work out. Love for you to join me. It's a great experience. Just tremendous people. Jeff Knox, the CEO, all the personal training staff. I'm a big advocate for personal training. The members themselves, it's laid-back atmosphere, bunch of good folks. You'll enjoy the Y. 2300 13th Street downtown. Get by and see them. They'll give you a tour. And we've got fitness classes. They can help with your child daycare, Silver Sneakers program for seniors. It's all available at the YMCA of Tuscaloosa. We'll be back with more of the Gary Harris Show right after this.
Now, this hour is West Alabama real-time news update from the Tuscaloosa Thread Newsroom.
As snow is ending in the northwest United States, Santa Ana's arrive in Southern California, and Hurricane Melissa is bringing destructive wind, storm surge, and flooding to Jamaica. Closer to home, rain will be moving in tonight into Wednesday morning. The Alabama Law Enforcement Agency shared essential tips for parents, kids, and drivers across Alabama as children get ready to make their rounds from door to door collecting sweet candy treats. For the complete list of tips, tap the Tuscaloosa Thread app.
If you haven't already, you've got to try Tuscaloosa's unique breakfast, brunch, and lunch concept, Brick and Spoon, downtown Tuscaloosa, Timberson Square. It's fresh food with a Cajun flair featuring a full bar with build-your-own Bloody Marys and mimosas. Open daily, 7 a.m. until 2 p.m., available for after-hours.
Bless you and thank you, because without the donors, St. Jude wouldn't be here.
Finding cures, saving children. Learn more at
at stjude.org.
Los Tarascos has been serving Mexican favorites like burritos, fajitas, and quesadillas since 1999. Their new location is at 4100 Owen Parkway in Northport. And, of course, you can find Los Tarascos in Tuscaloosa at 110 Skyland Boulevard. The bar areas feature big-screen television so you can enjoy your favorite sporting events. Los Tarascos features daily...
Available smartphones on three national mobile networks across all available network types. Your experiences may vary. Rootmetrics rankings are not an endorsement of AT&T. Based on advertising challenges of wireless and home internet providers filed from 2022 to 2025.
You're listening to the home of Alabama Crimson Tide sports. Tide 100.9.
You change your mind.
It's always game day at Game Day Men's Health, located at 1013th Street East in Tuscaloosa. Game Day Men's Health offers convenient, expert-backed care for all men looking to feel and perform their best. Your personalized treatment starts with a signature three-step plan. Complete intake and simple blood work. Get results in 15 minutes. Meet with a clinic director who specializes in hormone therapy and men's health and begin your customized treatment plan. And their consultations are free. Fatigue, stress, poor sleep, low libido, and weight gain aren't just everyday annoyances. They can be signs your body needs support. At Game Day Tuscaloosa, they get to the root of these symptoms and deliver treatment plans tailored to your goals. What you can expect from Game Day, tailored men's health plans, boosted energy levels, improved motivation and mood, deeper, more restful sleep, reduced belly fat, stronger workouts, and faster muscle recovery, natural hair regrowth support. These are things that all men could use in their lives. I'm Gary Harris, and I highly endorse Game Day Men's Health, located at 1013th Street East in Tuscaloosa. Get by and see them for that free consultation. Find out more at GameDayMen'sHealth.com. All right, let's jump out on the Gary Harris Show hotline and welcome in Steve here in Tuscaloosa. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Gary. Appreciate you taking my call, brother. I caught the tail end of your conversation with Cowboy, and he did bring up something that I just can't let go. Kurt Cignetti. And I happened to catch the media day thing, you know, way before the season started, and I saw an interview with him, as well as actually Rhett Lashley, pretty much calling out the SEC, stopping just short of calling out a particular school. How the SEC is nothing more than a 3 or 4 team league. It's all top heavy, and there's no substance to it. Again, Lashley said the same thing. Mm-hmm. Now, evidently, obviously, Cignetti's having tremendous success in Bloomington. Lashley seems to be fading out into the sunset. But my question is, Gary. And I'm naive about this, and then, you know, set me straight. But does burning bridges, these two guys are not where they are now without being in the SEC, in my opinion. Is burning bridges no longer a thing?
Yeah, it's no longer a thing, because if you have success, of course, I think Cignetti's locked into Indiana, but in Rhett Lashley's case, or these case, if you have success, it doesn't matter what you say about another league or another school or anything else. If they think you're a good coach, they're not going to say, well, we're not going to hire this guy because he said the SEC was a top-heavy league. So, no, I don't think they're – the only thing that burns bridges is if you don't win. That's it. There's no – otherwise, there's nothing that you can say or do that's going to keep somebody from trying to hire you if they think you can help their football program get where they want to go. That's just the reality of where we're at.
So what happens if, hypothetically, and this is a tremendous hypothetical, things fall out, the bottom drops out of Indiana, the bottom, you know, drops them even more out of SMU. These two guys are going to have to choose between going to a coach of school, you know, they're let go. They're going to have to go coach a school at, James Madison, Kennesaw State, or they have an option to come back to a school in the SEC to be a position coach or even a coordinator.
Yeah. Well, if the bottom drops out, they're both going to have millions of dollars. So here's the thing, you know, the bottom dropped out on James Franklin, but do you think he's going to come back as an assistant coach? I don't. There's going to be somebody that's going to hire him as a head coach. I mean, listen, there's like we talked about, Steve, there's more vacancies than there are coaches to fill them. So if you've got any kind of resume, You know, and it could happen. I mean, that's kind of what happened at Penn State. You know, that's what happened at Florida State. You know, they extended Mike Norvell after that big season they had 2 years ago, and now I think they would like to fire him, but they don't, you know, they're trying to come up with the money to do it. So it can happen. But these coaches now, because of the amount of money involved, like I said, they're not losers, they're winners. I mean, it's one of the few vocations out there that you're rewarded if you're not good at your job because of these agents that have been able to leverage these contracts and these schools agreeing to these ridiculous buyouts because of perception. So if you're Indiana and SMU, as long as they're coaching there, you hope that, you know, it's not going to fall. The bottom's not going to fall. And I don't think it would, Indiana. First of all, you know, Kurt Cignetti talking about top heavy, their non-conference was Old Dominion, Kennesaw State, and Indiana State. In conference, they did have to play Oregon, but they don't have Ohio State on the schedule. They don't have Michigan on the schedule. I mean, you know, my gosh, dude. I mean, they're playing some really weak teams. So, but you know what? He can say whatever he wants. And right now, Indiana people are eating it up. And that's really all you have to make happy is your contingency, your fan base. And he's doing that, and they're eating it up because they haven't had a taste of this kind of winning maybe ever at Indiana. Not maybe. They haven't. So,
no, you're exactly right. Yeah. And like I said, I'm naive to this kind of thing, but there is no loyalty anymore.
No, heck no, man.
Anywhere in college.
These coaches, most of them are mercenaries. You know, they're going to work hard for you because you're signing their check. But if they get a better opportunity somewhere else, they're going to take it. Hey, thank you, Steve. Always good to hear from
you,
man.
Thank you, Gary. Appreciate it, brother.
All right, 10:31. We're going to take a timeout and come back with Corey Reamer from the Crimson Tide Sports Network next year on the Gary Harris Show. As much as Innisfree has evolved, it will always be that place to escape and have a good time. Whether it's for a game day weekend, to reminisce on college days, or to create new memories, if you're looking for a good time, there's only one thing to do. Head to the Free at 1925 University Boulevard. And don't forget about the Lucky Lunch Meet and 3 special.
Keep up with the season's magic and all that awaits. Pick up a leaf and get back to what really matters, making memories. Use as directed.
Life doesn't wait for when your finances are in perfect order. It just happens. But no matter what surprises come your way, Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages, and auto loans. They offer an easy application process and fast decisions so you can stay focused on feeling good about whatever life brings your way. Alabama Credit Union will be here to help make it affordable with great personal loans, mortgages.
The Tide Post Game Show is powered by Pearl River Resort, DCH Regional Medical Center, Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, and Two Dimes.
Covering University of Alabama sports, as well as the national and local scene as well. The Gary Harris Show, only on Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
Welcome back into the Gary Harris Show. We're going to visit with Corey Reamer, sideline reporter for Alabama football for the Crimson Tide Sports Network, also former Crimson Tide national champion from 2009 under Nick Saban, signed out of Hoover High School by Mike Shula. And has an interesting story about how he wound up at Alabama. We're going to get into all that with Corey this morning. Good morning, Corey. How's it going?
Hey, Gary, what's going on, man?
Hey, doing great, man. Good to have you on. I want to start with your current responsibilities as sideline reporter for the Crimson Tide Sports Network and what you've seen from this Alabama team this year. Going back to that season opener, I think we were all caught off guard because, you know, yeah, we'd heard great reports all summer, you know, through the spring about how this team was on the same page. The buy-in was there. The work was there. Everything looked like it was lining up for a great season. And then you go down there to Tallahassee and just get it handed to you, and we're like, oh boy. But that was an outlier. Clearly this team was everything that we thought that they were. You know, you had Gus Malzahn had 6 months to prepare for Alabama. He had a good plan with Castellanos, the quarterback, and they put it on Bama, but boy, the Tide has bounced back nicely.
Yeah, they definitely have. It's been first game definitely caused a lot of concerns for Alabama fans, the team, the coaches, everybody just kind of was a little bit in shock after the results down in Tallahassee. And like you said, everything leading up to the first game, you know, pointed in the right direction. We saw, you know, this team had a lot of good pieces, but not maybe all the pieces that they needed for this coaching staff to be able to operate this team like they wanted to. And this year, it just seemed like we found those pieces through, through some new guys that were added to the roster. We got the right things in place. The attitude was right. The leadership felt right. Everything seemed good. And so coming out and having that first game and looking like we did against Florida State, it was just kind of a shock to everybody. And I think, unfortunately, sometimes some of the best lessons that you learn are through some tough times, and that loss definitely was a massive learning lesson for this team of how to respond to adversity. We didn't do it very well in that game. And you referenced it. It's Coach Saban even said it before the season started or before we even played this game. It's anytime you've got to prepare for a Gus Malzahn offense, it's very difficult to prepare for, especially if you don't have any tape on what they want to do. And you kind of know, you've seen what he's done at Auburn and UCF and all the other stops that he's been at. But with this roster at Florida State, you didn't have any tape of how they were going to use Tommy Castellanos and what it was going to look like. So preparing for that is very difficult. And you've seen Florida State really struggling as of late. And on top of that, they had, I think around 50 new guys on that roster at Florida State when we played them. So now people have tape on them. It's a little bit easier to game plan for. There's some injuries that they have. They're extremely healthy. They've got a really good defensive front. And all those things kind of played into the struggles that we had. And if you look at Alabama, just at us, not anything outside, you look at every single week from that game until now, how many different combinations of players have we had out there, especially at the O-line position? We've been rotating guys frequently, trying to get who we think are the best five out there, especially on the right side of that offensive line. And it's been kind of a revolving door of players. And so I think that plays into a little bit of, you go into the season thinking you've got the right guys in the right places, but we've been shifting those guys around in game, not just from week to week, but even in game. You saw Michael Carroll being at right tackle, and then you've also seen Wilkin Formby, even in this last game against South Carolina. Those guys are changing. I think that makes it tough on the run game that hasn't been what we would love for the run game to be, and I think it makes it even tough on Ty getting comfortable of knowing who his guys are then in front of him. So kudos to this Ryan Grubb and to this offense of finding ways to be successful with all of the changes that they've had, especially starting at that offensive line unit. But since then, they responded really well. This past game was one that was also a struggle on that side of the football, and we hadn't seen that. We went through four games of ranked teams, ranked opponents on the road, at home, and the offense was really clicking on a very high level. And then we go to South Carolina and it looked more like the Florida State game from an offensive standpoint until late in that fourth quarter. And they made plays when they needed to be made to win that ball game. But it kind of was reminiscent of that first game of not finding that rhythm, that flow, putting together those 5, 6, 7 minute drives. But they found a way to win the ball game, and a lot of that credit has to go to the defense as well, who's been playing at a really high level, especially these last few weeks against some pretty tough offenses. Not this past weekend, but they did enough to keep South Carolina out of the end zone when they had to, and got points themselves, which helped, definitely helped get us in the win column this weekend.
Corey Reamer with us from the Crimson Tide Sports Network. Yeah, you did a good job of laying that out. So you get past Florida State, and I do think the schedule has helped. And hear me out, because it's been tough. I'm not saying that. But you play in 12 games, so you get the double bye. You're able to come home against Monroe, hang 73 on them. Then you get Wisconsin from the Big Ten, beat them 38-14. Then you get your first bye ahead of this incredible five-game stretch that just completed. At Georgia, home against Vanderbilt, at Missouri, at home against Tennessee, and at South Carolina. And you could see, like you said, by this last game, after those four ranked opponents, there was, looked like they were running out of gas a little bit. But you were able to sell them, I think, that's the coaching staff, that, hey, just give me one more week and we get to another bye. You go through that unscathed, which is remarkable, to 5-0 in that stretch. Now you get to kind of hit the reset button again for this stretch at home against LSU, Oklahoma, and Eastern Illinois, then the Iron Bowl at Auburn. So the schedule, while difficult, these byes strategically placed where they're at have really, I think, helped Alabama a lot.
Yeah, they needed it so bad this week. And, you know, after going through that, you've got some guys that are obviously injured. We've been battling injury, especially, you know, with Jam Miller at running back to start the season. And then he gets a little banged up in that Missouri game, but you've lost a couple guys on the defensive side of the ball. But not only those guys, but just the amount of just being dinged up, just being, you're just tired. Your body's tired. You need some time to recover, especially with the physical games that we've been playing. You know, this is not – that five-game stretch was not games where we went in there and just absolutely dominated and you're able to rest your starters in the second half. I mean, we've been fighting tooth and nail to get these wins for some of these games. It was outside of – I think Tennessee was the only one that we really had in hand. It felt like, even though it did take, you know, late into the second half to get to that point, to play all the way till the clocks hit zeros, where we have done that in most of these other games. So you haven't had a chance to rest your starters and get some of these backup guys in there to get some reps. And so it takes a toll. I mean, it's just a physical schedule. It's a tough schedule for anybody, especially in the SEC when you've got this many ranked opponents. And South Carolina, you know, although their record is not good and their offense has not been great, their defense has been extremely good. That is the unit of that team that has held it together for the South Carolina team and kept them in ball games to where they're not getting necessarily blown out. You know, they've created a bunch of turnovers. It was a tough test for this offense. Two guys on the edge that caused a lot of problems for Ty Simpson in the passing game as well. And you saw how it affected us. We just couldn't get any flow going. But yeah, massive advantage right now for us to finally get that bye week. And you see what these teams, a lot of these teams that we've played this year so far, they had their bye week right before they played us. And you can kind of see how fresh those teams come out, and they're ready to go. They've had a chance to rest before they play Alabama, and we just haven't had that. So this is huge. Get some guys to let their bodies heal up a little bit to go on this last stretch that's just going to be as difficult as the one we just went on. Albeit just one less game. You only got four games left. But really, you know what the Iron Bowl represents, and you know that Auburn has improved throughout this year. They've making changes at quarterback. Their defense has been really, really solid. But you've also got Oklahoma and LSU, which we know what those matchups are going to look like.
Corey Reamer with us. I want to ask you about Ty Simpson because, again, he'd been around here going into his fourth year. We know he's a five-star out of high school. Know he played for – you know, his dad's a college coach. So he came up in a coaching family, and we knew he was talented, but he had never done it before. He never started a game. And I think we all felt like he was ready. But did you ever, Corey, imagine that he would play at the level he's playing at as a serious Heisman Trophy candidate in his first year as a starter? I mean, he still only started eight games in his college career.
No, and I don't think anybody expected this. I mean, maybe somebody that, you know, internally that watches him every day. We've gotten to see him a few times last year throughout the season, that South Florida game. And I don't think anybody anticipated that this marriage between Ty Simpson and Ryan Grubb was going to look as good as it has so far. And he is, you know, sometimes quarterback looks really good just because of the system they're in. But the plays that Ty Simpson is making, the decisions that he's making, the accuracy that he's throwing the football with, his ability to keep his eyes down the field when he feels pressure in the pocket or when he needs to escape out of the pocket to extend plays. Nobody anticipated him to, you know, there's probably somebody that did, but it definitely wasn't me. You know, I thought he was a good quarterback. I thought he was going to really thrive in this system. And I was excited about what this offense is going to look like this year with him at the helm versus what we had last year with Jalen trying to run this offense. But in no way, shape, or form did I ever expect to see the level of play that he has had so far this season. I mean, being that close and watching some of these throws that he's making, and it'd be one thing if it was just here, one there. But, I mean, he's putting the ball in places that only the receiver can get the football. And it's a little bit of a cliche, but he does it over and over again. I mean, that play against Tennessee out of the back of the end zone last week when he – has pressure, but absolutely just throws a dime to Ryan Williams. And that DB had great coverage. And it was the only one place where the football could go. And he places it there. And he does it almost consistently all the time in every single game. This past weekend, I think he just got a little bit out of rhythm and missed a few easy opportunities that he usually doesn't miss. But yeah, it's been fun to watch. I mean, he is a competitor. He doesn't seem very fazed by what happens in the game. His mental toughness is next level, which you don't, you know, you've kind of lost the art of guys that can, you know, have the confidence in themselves. When things go bad, they just go back to the bench. They get their corrections. They let that go and they continue to go out there and play. And he's got all these intangibles as well as the physical ability that you'd love to see out of a quarterback.
The staff, bringing Ryan Grubb back. Corey, let me ask you about this dynamic because it just seems like it just works great. You've got an offensive-minded head coach. And we know in the first season, the plan was for Ryan Grubb to be the coordinator. He went back to Seattle to take the Seahawks offensive coordinator job. I thought Nick Sheridan stepped in and did a nice job. But now you have DeBoer, you have Grubb in the press box calling the plays, and you've got Sheridan as the quarterback's coach down on the field working with Ty. It just seems like it's, you know, it's kind of the way it was designed in the first place, you know, with Grubb to be the play caller. And I thought Nick Sheridan, who's a brilliant young coach, did a terrific job last year. But now this staff offensively, they give defensive coordinators fits trying to prepare for them.
Yeah, I mean, their creativity and the timing of when they call the plays that need to be called, the route concepts that they have that really put defenses in a bind. I can't imagine being a coordinator and having to game plan for this style of an offense. And you saw last week on the 2-point conversion play, you know, they've just got stuff up their sleeve. They're prepared for any moment. They know, you know, and I think the difference, Nick Sheridan is a great coach and is a great offensive mind. I think he was kind of working with one hand tied behind his back last year and who he had on the field trying to execute this offense. And Michael Penix was a phenomenal quarterback at Washington who has a – he's not a guy that uses his legs to run an offense. He has the ability to, he is athletic, but he was so good at reading defenses and understanding how the offense was built to work. And we just didn't have that last year in Jalen Milroe. Jalen is if you put him on any field, NFL or college, he's probably the best athlete that is on the field at any given time, even at the NFL level. But his strengths were not the strengths that these coaches would love to see for them to execute the offense that they want to execute. And I think Ty is exactly the guy that has the ability to go out there and do what these coaches want to do. And the reason they call these plays, they know what they're looking for, and Ty sees it on the field in real time as well. And hopefully we can keep the band together, you know. And I think these guys that are behind Ty that are going to be coming up, if we can, I think all these guys have the ability to execute a playbook just like Ty is. But both those coaches, Nick Sheridan and Ryan Grubb, I've watched in a Missouri game, the Tennessee game, you know, even this past weekend, just the play calling and the creativity and the design of route concepts of how they get these DBs to get so crisscrossed and they don't know who to take, especially out of bunch sets, and they put pressure when you've got a cover two look, put pressure on the safety to make a decision. You put pressure on the corner to make a decision. And you've got a guy running, you know, streaking right down the middle in between the seams, and he's wide open. And it's like, man, what a brilliant play call at the right time of the game. You knew probably what you were going to get from a coverage look. And to call that and to, you know, execute it as well as they have, it's been incredible.
This final stretch run that I mentioned at home against LSU without Brian Kelly, Oklahoma, Eastern Illinois, then at the Iron Bowl. Do you think Bama can run the table here and get it to 11-1, 8-0 in the SEC and go to Atlanta for the SEC championship game?
There.
All right, yeah, Corey, I was just saying this final stretch run that we mentioned earlier with LSU minus Brian Kelly, Oklahoma, Eastern Illinois, and at Auburn for the Iron Bowl. You think Bama can run the table? Well, we lost him completely. All right, I tell you what, maybe we can get him back on. Let's go ahead and take a break. Try to get Corey back on, and we'll finish this up. We'll also try to squeeze in a phone call. We'll see if we can get Corey back. We lost him there for a moment. We'll be right back on the Gary Harris Show.
Fowler.
Coming up on the Tuesday edition of the game, we'll talk to Mike Dettillier from WWL. We'll talk about what's next for LSU as they prepare for the University of Alabama. We'll do that with Mike Dettillier. We're going to have a film study session with Brooks Austin, the film guy. He's going to break down some Alabama film. We'll talk about where Alabama can improve and what he has been pleased with so far. We'll talk to Chris Plank from SiriusXM, all starting at 2 p.m. on the game with Ryan Fowler on Tide 100.9, 1230, WTBC, your home of Alabama Crimson Tide Sports.
The longest running sports program in Tuscaloosa.
The game, the Tide postgame show is powered by Pearl River Resort, DCH Regional Medical Center, Tuscaloosa Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram, and Two Dimes.
Never miss a moment of the action. Download the free Tide 100.9 app today.
All right, we're back for our final couple of minutes. The phone gremlins bit us there with Corey Reamer, but we want to get him back on to finish this out. So I don't know what happened, Corey, but good to have you back. What I was saying before we lost you was Alabama now is set up for this stretch run that we mentioned. LSU without Brian Kelly, Oklahoma, Eastern Illinois at home, and then at Auburn for the Iron Bowl. Do you think they can run the table, get it to 8-0 in the SEC, 11-1 overall, and get to Atlanta for the SEC championship game? And basically, we'll have already wrapped up a spot in the college football playoff.
Yeah, I think they definitely can. They've shown that this team is they've improved every week, and I heard you've heard it every single week in the locker room after the games. You know, this is we have not put our best football forward yet. We haven't done it. We haven't played that complete game where we just go out and dominate from start to finish on both sides of the football, and that's got to be terrifying for everybody else that we face. You know, I think that we're hitting the right strides, and we've faced some adversity and had some games that didn't go our way. I mean, this tested us this past weekend against South Carolina, tested this team in a really tough way, put the defense on the field for a lot. They were found a way to get stops, keep South Carolina out of the end zone. They've been playing really well. And this offense, I feel like, you know, this was a good test for them to go through. And towards the end of the game, they believed in themselves, found a way to make plays to win the ball game. But, yeah, you look at what the remaining schedule looks like. You know you got LSU without Brian Kelly. You know the history of any team that comes out right after their head coach is fired. It's another situation where it's going to be tough because now, not that you have to throw all the tape of what you've seen out from this season so far, but you know that this new coaching staff are going to come out, maybe play with a little bit of more intensity than they would have since their head coach has now been fired. Probably unexpectedly from these players. A lot of these players, you know, liked Brian Kelly. I think it's going to be a tough test. Plus just what this matchup means without all of that going on. But we get them at home. Oklahoma has been playing really well. We saw them struggle this past week against Ole Miss. Ole Miss, they would have put up a lot of points on this Brent Venables defense. But Brent Venables is a good coach, and John Mateer is one of those quarterback styles that gives, you know, has given us fits in the past. You know, but I think this defense is coming into their own. They're finding ways. You know, they might not get stops in between the 20s, but finding ways to get stops when offenses get in the red zone, they've been really efficient at that from that standpoint. And then I think Auburn's going to be a really tough test on the road. This team is starting to play a little bit better. Like I said earlier, their defense is really, really good. And their offense, you know, a change of quarterback this past weekend, and things might look different. It's not going to be easy.
No.
It's going to be a tough test.
Never,
three games.
Never is, as you know. All right, we're getting up against the clock, but yeah. I mentioned you're coming out of Hoover High School. Huge Auburn family. Tommy Tuberville did not recruit you. Mike Shula did. So you wind up at Alabama. Then Nick Saban comes in, and Tom, one of our great callers, called in and said he wanted you to say if this was a true story. Of course, we know Nick Saban recruited to the critical factors, just like in the NFL, height, weight, you know, speed for certain positions. Did he tell you on the practice field one day that he would have never recruited you, or is that just an urban legend?
No, it's true. And it's something that he even told the media as well. I think it was maybe after the Ole Miss game my senior year, I think he even said to the media, I had a great game on special teams and on defense.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he mentioned it during the
He did. I remember it now. Yeah.
Yeah. This is not a guy that when we came on staff that we ever probably expected to play here, but here he is.
Your last season,
that's the way you got to play.
Yeah. All you did was go for 50 tackles, 7 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, forced fumble, interception, and a block kick. And you guys won the national championship. So it all worked out in the end, didn't it, Corey?
It definitely did.
Hey, thanks.
Go
finish your thought.
Just saying, you know, it was an honor to play for him, but he told me pretty quickly, like you said, you know, I was trying to play safety coming off of 2 ACL surgeries, and he said, you know, we need safeties that can bend at the hip, knees, and ankles, and you can't do any of it. So if you want to play on this team, you better put some weight on and get in the box, play linebacker, and so that's what we had to do and found a way to get on the field and contribute to 2 pretty good teams.
Yeah, you did. Got up to 230-plus pounds, man. Hey, great, and the Reamer family's all Bama now. Thank you, Corey.
That's exactly right. Appreciate it.
All right, man. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Gary Harris Show, The Miller's Edge. Coming up next, have a great day, everybody.